Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven rings. Rings with the harmonies of liberty.
So, KGNU listeners, welcome back to Black Talk. My name is Michelle Simpson, and I'd like to take just a bit of time to welcome back regular listeners, occasional listeners, and welcome to those of you who are brand new. We value you all. So you may notice and may have noticed that Black Talk is coming to you a week later than we normally do. And that's because of last week's pledge drive. So I hope all of you who could pledge did. And those of you who thought about it during the pledge drive and didn't, will. Although we're airing a week later than usual, Black Talk is still committed to elevating Black voices, Black thought, and Black vision. And so today, I have the distinct pleasure of speaking with John Robinson Miller IV, whose life motto is Lead, Endure, Remember. Again, Lead, Endure, Remember. So John, it is lovely, lovely to have you here today on Black Talk. Thank you.
It is great to be here.
No, well, thank you. And let me just give a little intro to folks who don't know you yet. John is the Associate Director of the Center for African and African American Studies, affectionately and colloquially known as The Cause, at the University of Colorado Boulder. So John, let me start by asking you this, because I have wondered this since I met you. Your name is John Robertson Miller IV. Who are the other three?
So I'll say birth name is John Miller IV.
Okay.
I got married 3 years ago and we hyphenated. Three.
Belated congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, the other three were, it is so interesting to think back and reflect on the other three. I did not know the first John. He was not alive when I was born. The second John, who we called Papa, because when you have more than one John in one house, everybody has to have a different name.
Exactly.
So we have Papa, who was small in size, but big. Like he just had this like big, stern, but like loving, that would give you the shirt off his back, but also like pull you to the side and make sure that you got yourself together.
Right.
And then he died when I was younger. I had to be somewhere around kindergarten.
Okay.
And then I think about my dad, who was in the Air Force, who was a detective in Buncombe County, which is in Asheville, which as a Black man and a detective in Asheville, North Carolina, things and spaces. I'll leave that there. But he also died when I was 14. So I am kind of in this adulthood journey trying to figure out who they were and trying to figure out how much of me is them now that I'm adult, because I was, you know, very much so younger, very much so not in my who I am now.
Got it.
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I think we're all on that journey, aren't we?
Yeah.
Trying to figure
hopefully.
That out. So John, let me ask you this. You spent quite a lot of time in North Carolina education-wise. Is North Carolina home?
So South Carolina is home for me.
Oh, South Carolina. Okay, so you got to cross the border. Okay.
You got to cross, yeah. So okay. Carolina's, I was born in Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also say that I was very much so raised in Orangeburg, South Carolina.
You're kidding.
South Carolina, absolutely. So like,
I have family there.
It's from there. So cousin.
Yes, cousin. I have family in Orangeburg. Seriously, how funny. We'll have to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been to Charleston, for example, but I have spent the bulk of my time when I go to South Carolina, with my family in Orangeburg. Yes. How funny. Oh, I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was so like literally like raised there, but also lived there for a good bit of time. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's one of 13, and all girls.
And each
one of those 13 had at least two. So I have a huge extended family, and we were all raised much more like siblings than we were cousins.
So
moved there. So then I didn't move to North Carolina, to Charlotte, until high school.
Got it.
From there, just kind of stayed around up and down 40.
Got it. So by car, Boulder is, I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm really bad with mileage, is approximately 26 hours away from North Carolina by car. So
yes.
I can understand that being part of the inaugural team of the Center for African and African American Studies, the CAUSE, was a draw for you.
Mm-hmm.
But accepting the associate directorship meant accepting that you'd be coming to a city with, what is it? I think the last count was 1.2% Black population. So as a member of the Black CU Boulder community, I can say what you already know. we've never had a space like the CAUSE. We've never had a space to gather safely or bravely, if you will. We've never had a space where we can just be unapologetically, unregrettably, kind of brazenly Black. Tell us, because I know many listeners will want to know this, when did the doors of the CAUSE officially open?
The doors of the CAUSE officially opened on August 20th. We had our Black and Boulder Symposium for our first year students and graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the day that we say that we officially opened. Mm-hmm. So we are a little over, almost 2 months open now.
Yeah. Well, tell me this. Back to where I was headed, mm-hmm. you coming to Boulder, and again, understanding that the CAUSE, you know, having an opportunity to work with Dr. Raylan Rabaka and the community, the folks on the CU Boulder campus and all of that. What did you think about when you began thinking about actually not only moving to Boulder, but then coming to CU Boulder? Yeah, you know where I'm going. So I'll leave that.
Yeah, to you.
Just what were you thinking? What came up for you? What did you wrestle with, if anything? And maybe you didn't wrestle at all. Maybe you were just ready for a big change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I've been doing this kind of Black Cultural Center work for a couple of years and knew that it was time for me to move into a space that was specific. Could I tell you what that specific meant? Absolutely not. But one of our closest friends actually works up here and saw that this position and reached out to my partner, who then said, hey, like, it's possible. How do you feel about moving to Colorado? And that's when you deal with the pandemic and like all that stuff.
I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's try it. Let's explore. So then I was like, but I have stipulations. If I go to Colorado to get a job, it has to meet three criteria. Like, the first criteria is it has to be specifically about Black people.
Okay.
The second was that it had to be positioned differently than my other roles, which I was a program coordinator previously and an assistant director previously. So I had to be moving up.
Got it. Okay.
And third, like, I had to have conviction. I'm a person who I make decisions. I can think about it all day. I can feel about it all day. But if I don't feel conviction, then it's just not me.
Okay.
And that is very intuitive. That is very South Carolina. That is very Black. That is very like, if I don't feel it, then I know it's not for me.
Got it.
And I will say, like, in the moment, like, I knew, so like, In North Carolina, like South Carolina, when I'm telling people, like, I'm going to Colorado, like, the immediate one is like, are Black people in Colorado?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I at that point, I know as much as they do. So I'm like, yes, I do know that there are Black people in Colorado. I believe so. I see people there. But honestly, I moved to this role sight unseen.
So you had been to Colorado.
I had been to Colorado previously, but I had not been like in this position. My interviews were virtual, like everything. So when I say conviction, I mean conviction. Like this was like me and my family moving here. And I can say confidently, I did not know, like, I did not know what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. I've been doing race work. It is my passion. It is probably the thing that I will do until the end of my days. But when I stepped foot on this campus and really saw that, like, you can say like one in roughly 36 students are Black on this campus, but you don't really know what that means until you sit on this campus and really like look at how there's this almost this unbelievableness, right? Mm-hmm. It almost feels overwhelming. And like the more I talk to students, the more I talk to faculty, the more I talk to staff, like that is a common experience for Black folks. Mm-hmm. Is that it's kind of unbelievably overwhelming at first.
Okay.
And then you can kind of settle in and you find your space, then you can find your spaces and find your places. But yeah, like moving to Colorado was truly like things working out, things just kind of syncing up and feeling that like I had something to do here and both that my partner had something to do here.
Let me ask you this. So you were talking about going through the kind of interview process and all of that and you know, much of that, if not all of that, was online. There may have been, and kind of knowing you, Johnny, know you, what was the moment, what was the thing that said to you, okay, I'm gonna do this? What was it? Was it a conversation? Was it a dream? Was it kind of a gut feeling? What was it that kind of said to you, and you said to yourself, yeah, I'm going to do this. I think I can do this. And feeling that conviction that you spoke of earlier.
I think the family friend who works here at Boulder and also the director of the Marcus Garvey Center at UNC, she was the officiant at the wedding. Like she's been in Colorado for a couple of years. And to know those two people who really know me and who really know what my soul can bring to the table, for them to say, it's time, like, do it. Like, I know it's scary. I know it's not what you thought or where you thought you would be, but there's something that I believe is here for you.
Yeah.
And to hear them say that, particularly like I am trust Black women, like at the end of my days, I am trust Black women. And to hear somebody who I really trusted, who really knows me say like, you have something to do here. Really was the yes for me.
Okay.
Everything was nice. Like the position was great. Like the team that I was going to be working with was amazing. What we would be able to do, or planning to do was great. But really to have somebody like see my soul and to say like, yes,
yeah,
go ahead.
This is for
it's
you.
Time.
So let me ask you this. What is something, again, you talked about the cause and that the doors have been officially open, you know, for several months now. What is something since the cause has opened, and it may not be in the building, because you all are located in Mackey, the Mackey Auditorium, you have space there. But what is something that, John, you've observed, maybe eavesdropped on, participated in, that has changed you since you've been with the cause, since you've been on campus, maybe since you've been in Boulder?
I think that a realization that has changed me is we kind of always hear of like, we know that there are stories, we know that there are people, we know that there are untold stories.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I am learning here is that there are so many untold stories about the labor and the effort and the pain and the all the things of Black folks here, particularly in Boulder and on Boulder's campus.
Okay.
That sustained the students for decades and did not get the credit at all. Hmm. We don't know who they are. We may never know who they are. But to know that in the face of not being supported the way that Black folks should be supported, that there have been people, there have been faculty, there have been staff, there have been community members who have done this work. So nothing, almost nothing that the cause is doing is new, both to Black studies, both to Black cultural centers, to Boulder, because the Black and Boulder Symposium to welcome in first year Black students and get them oriented to Boulder, we know that happened in the 90s. We know that it was students that led that in the 90s. We know that it was through funding that the students were able to get as why those things happened. And that realization that, like, we get to do something, one, to provide the service, but two, to really address the narrative that there are no Black people in Boulder, mm-hmm. is to erase the real labor and the real struggle that the students have had to have, that faculty and staff have had to have through all of the folks that have made something out of almost nothing. and I'm not being facetious to say, like, there is very little infrastructure for Black people here. Mm-hmm. And to know that I can honor the people who did it, who mm-hmm. did the work, in a way where we can institutionalize something, right? Mm-hmm. We can make long-lasting, sustainable change in a way that is very public, in a way where we have the metaphorical underground railroad of support for students and faculty and staff, but we can also be very loud and very proud and very openly upfront about that. I can walk into meetings and say, but what about the Black students?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like, yes, minoritized students, absolutely. BIPOC students, absolutely. But what about the Black students? And what about their narratives are we not paying attention to, or are we losing? Because yeah. there's so many students that leave Boulder from year to year.
Yeah.
We lose about 20 to 40% of all Black students.
Mm-hmm.
And that is saying something. That's saying there's something in the water here. If we're talking about, you know, the groundwater, there's something in the water here that is not sitting well with our souls.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still people who do it. There's mm-hmm. still people who get through it. There's still people who teach and learn and love and support and cry and yeah. eat and do all that. Like, there's still people who exist here.
Mm-hmm.
And that realization said, well, maybe that's my specific thing, right? Because if I have the knowledge and I have the skills and I have the ability to also exist here, but to also help folks create community, then maybe that's my purpose right now.
I like how you put it, because, you know, as a longtime CU Boulder person, I like that sort of recognition. And I'm not taking credit for anything. I'm just saying that we're here and that we've been here, you know, making it work. And, you know, doing the best we can and taking care of, you know, the students on campus and one another, and have been doing that for a very long time. I think, though, you're the very first person who's ever, yeah. though, articulated it, you know, because, again, it just feels like kind of this invisible work or invisible effort. And so I thank you for that. And not that you were speaking directly to me, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm gonna kind of take my little piece of that, because so many, you know, come and gone and so on and so forth. Yeah.
And that this work, hey, if you look back to all the folks that have done Black liberation work, and it takes a piece of your soul, right? And we can't undervalue that. We can't undervalue just how many pieces of Black souls are left here. And people leave. I have learned that typically people who were here trying to support, trying to build that community, and they leave, most times they leave because they feel like they have nothing left to give.
Yeah.
They have given so much mm-hmm. that they have nothing left, and they have to figure out how to rebuild that. And, like, I want to speak to that, right? That is not just the number of faculty staff retention. That is saying something else.
Mm-hmm.
We have a problem. And that problem, there's this thing in Black culture that we don't necessarily talk about, which is honoring. Like, I get to honor the past. I don't get to just recognize or remember it, but I get to say, because of these people, I stand on their shoulders. Because of the class that we're taking care of now, our grandchildren and great-grandchildren can come to see you Boulder and have an easier time.
Yeah. No, again, thank you. No, as I said, thank you. I've not heard it articulated ever. And as I said, I've been around a very, very, very long time. So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, John. There are so many things. My God, I can't keep up. Seriously. There are so many things going on at the cause. Seriously. I think, where do these ideas come from? And I know where they're coming from. So I'm speaking to the person who is hatching many of these ideas. What is your, because there have been so many events. I mean, there's been a cookout. There have been symposia. There have been gatherings for faculty, staff, you know, student. I mean, it just goes on. You know, films have been, it goes on. What is your dream event? Maybe something that you haven't had a chance to put together, but you think, you know, if I had the funding, if we had the, you fill in the blanks, this is something I would absolutely, hands down, want to do. What is your dream event? Because I'm wondering, my God, when is that John going to run out of ideas? Now, I mean that. When I read the newsletter, and speaking of which, we want to make certain to have something kind of posted on the KGNU website for people who want to subscribe. But when I read the newsletter, I'm like, oh my God. You know, I think, I don't know. and then there are other communications that come out from the cause that are not necessarily connected to the newsletter about things that are happening or coming up. And I just think, oh my God. And I know you're the engine behind that. So what is your dream event?
I mean, first one, thank you. I am starting to accept credit more. Like, thank you. I'm working on it. But I also have to name the amazing team of folks that I work with, Dr. Rebecca and Lakeisha, who, like, I can't, nor would I do this in a vacuum. Like, we are a team that is, like, working to make this happen. My dream event, I think, so I'm an ideator. That is probably one of my top strengths, is that I can just come up with ideas. Mm-hmm. If you give me more time, I'll come up with more ideas. and I embody, I think, a Black radical imagination, being able to say, like, okay, so what's possible? Okay, so now what's impossible? Okay, is the thing that is impossible only because we're doing it for Black people? Okay, then let's change that. Like, let's make that happen.
Okay.
So if I were to have a dream event, I have so many dream events. I keep a book I keep a journal of, like, just things that I want to do in the future. But right now, I want to do almost like an incubator or a think tank, okay, where we can have Black students, both undergrad and grad, faculty and staff, but also community members, come together, be compensated to learn about Black radical imagination, to learn about problems, but then to also solve problems, mm-hmm, to solve community problems in a way that honors where we all come from, in a way that makes everybody feel included, in a way that, like, is different. And I think, like, having a think tank, when we can talk about, okay, so what is the issues around sustainable Black businesses? Well, let's have a think tank, and then like, advocate and build that. Let's have ones specifically on students who are looking to build their own business.
Got it.
And let's get lawyers in the mix. Let's get, like, folks that can help them create business plans. Let's get, like, them in front of the city. Let's get them in front of, like, the people who can, like, make it work. But we're also building this young entrepreneurial spirit, because if anybody has that grind right now, it's the students. Like, the more we experience this, the more tired we get, the more limited we get in our imagination. And, like, how awesome and how much of an amazing resource that we can hone and grow to, like, take care of Black imagination while it's young. That is the dream event. Like, how can we, like, yes, sustainable, yes, retention, yes, all those things, but how can we allow ideas, allow Black ideas to become bigger than we are.
You are listening to Black Talk on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. John Robertson Miller IV is the Associate Director of the Center for African and African American Studies. You know, I remember, John, communicating with you one day. I don't know if we were emailing. I don't remember, but communicating with you one day when a student came in who needed your help. And so we needed to reschedule, you know, and that happens. Mm-hmm. That happens for me. But in this instance, I experienced it differently. And I experienced it differently because of the cause and why the cause is and how it came to be. And even though, again, you know, anyone can Google, you know, the Center for African and African American Studies and get a sense of the mission and the objectives and all of that. That for me was the cause. In other words, that a student needed help. A student mm-hmm. needed to come in and talk and had some place to go. someone who was there, someone who could see that student, and I mean see them, as well as hear them. And so I'm not asking you to kind of breach any confidentiality or anything like that, but that was a day for me when I think I fully got it. Mm. You know, intellectually, I understood the need to develop, to design this co-curricular community building space. I got it, you know, but it was more abstract, I think, until then. So I just wanted to ask you, is that what's happening at the cause on that kind of individual, I need to talk, I need you, I need to be seen, I need to be heard level? Is that happening? Given the 2 months, you know, that the doors of the cause has been opened, because for me, that was a very poignant and powerful moment. And so I just wanted to come back to it.
Yeah, it is. That is our philosophy in the cause, that we prioritize students. That is my personal philosophy, that there's very little that I won't cancel for a student in crisis. Mm-hmm. There's very little. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, I think that's a place. So far we've had, there is both things that students are coming, faculty and staff as well, that are coming to us that what we offer doesn't exist anywhere on campus. Mm-hmm. And there's also stuff that people are bringing to us where things do exist on campus, but they don't feel safe enough, or they have had a negative experience with that particular resource, and or they don't feel seen, or they're saying something and the person's not listening to what they're saying, or really hearing what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's happening. Like, we are, and to say this also, not just only in the cause, but it's kind of, as we are getting more out there and in front of people, we are now getting folks who are like, I'm just walking by, going to, you know, somewhere, going to get some food or something. And the student is like, "You're John, right? Hey, can we talk?" And I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely. We can talk." Yeah, so like, yeah. I think that is starting to happen. And the more and more we show up. And I think a part of that is, as the cause, we are not saying we're on campus now, trust us. That's not our perspective. Our perspective is, we are asking for the opportunity for us to show up for you, mm-hmm. and to show up with you, and allow trust to follow. And that is critical, if not essential, when you're engaging with people who have had not so great or supportive experiences from institutions or structures.
Got it.
Is that I'm not here to force trust. Just because I'm here and I'm paid by the university does not mean that I am the knower of all things.
Exactly. No, I hear that. Let me ask you this. And I think this might be really helpful to our listeners. What do you, John, what would you like, or what do you want listeners to know about what life is like on a PWI, you know, so at a predominantly white institution, a campus such as CU? It doesn't have to be CU, but a campus such as CU, because those experiences can have overlapping features, you know, depending.
Yes.
But, you know, since we're kind of in the CU milieu, we can talk about CU.
Mm-hmm.
But many of our listeners are hearing us talk, hearing about the cause, hearing about some of the programs, hearing about your inspiration, hearing about some of these things, but maybe we need to roll the tape back a little bit and set the foundation for what that looks like. You know, what does that feel like to be a Black student on a predominantly white campus like CU and in a predominantly white city? So there's nowhere to go necessarily, kind of easily or quickly. What would you say? Because as I said, maybe we need to share some of that as well. I think that might help in some of our listeners' understanding of what we're talking about.
I'll put it in a broad term. Imagine knowing that you can do something.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from a place, generally, from a community who recognize your ability to do whatever that thing is. And then moving into this new community, whether that be college, a predominantly institution, mm-hmm. that not only questions whether you can do something, but questions why you're here. And having to have that internal fight and struggle to say, no, I can do this. Mm-hmm. No, I can go to class. No, I can do this. I am, insert brilliant. I am able, I can handle all of this. And also being able to, but then also learning what is something that's either like the secondary curriculum or the hidden curriculum, right? What are you learning that's not being taught?
Mm-hmm.
And that is like so much of our students are learning things that are not being taught, but are absolutely being taught. They're learning in their classes when they can speak up or when can't they speak up. When they're learning the actual material for one,
mm-hmm.
and then two, they're also learning that even if I know the material, if I speak up, what does that say about me? If I don't speak up, what does that say about me? They are hearing, they're being treated, they're working in group projects where literally just for being Black, their group members feel that they're not able to do or contribute in a significant way, right? This is kind of this pervasive, almost feeling like gaslighting, where like, yes, we value you. Yes, bring you. Yes, bring all of your difference in because it makes us all better. And we are also going to question who you are at your core at every step of the way.
Okay.
So then there's this weird like hyper observance that happens. Like, is this happening because it's chance or is this happening because I'm Black? Right? Or particularly at the intersections. Is this happening by chance or is this happening because I'm a Black woman? Is this happening by chance or is this happening because I'm Black and trans or just trans, or particularly at the intersection of Black and other things? And you kind of always have to question it. And I was actually literally just talking to a student about this yesterday, where, and all of that is going on and all of these kind of world global politics things are going on. And yet you still have, you're expected to perform in the same way as your peers, right? That is imagine writing a paper that is difficult, right? It's already a difficult concept to grasp. And yet you're not feeling safe. You're not feeling like, when we talk about like what is needed to feel safe, we can go back to like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where like you go down to the basics, like food, water, safety, security.
Mm-hmm.
Before you can even get to the higher level thinking, like, who am I? Who do I, how do I belong to this world? What do I want to do in the future? You got to feel safe. So there are so many of our students that are operating from a place of pure survival. And they are recognized for their studentness. They are recognized for their mind. And there's a part that they're not recognized for the experience that they have to go through, that they have to tolerate. And in a lot of cases, across PWIs, just in general, mm-hmm. We are not developmental in the ways that we think we are. And a lot of our students are succeeding in spite of the barriers that we put in front of them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's something to note. And as you're listening and thinking about the experience, and we talk about microaggressions and people have feelings about, whether it's a bigger deal or not. But if you can imagine, for folks with little kids or with a hobby of Legos, imagine that you have these invisible Legos and you're barefoot and your entire day is like walking around, and eventually you don't know when or where these Legos are, but you know they're out there. So you're just kind of stepping on them, right? You're stepping and they hurt and they're an inconvenience. And sometimes they leave a little scratch, or sometimes they don't, but like you're feeling them every time, but you can't tell when or where, and you can't escape it either.
Yeah, it just is.
Mm-hmm. It just is. Mm-hmm. That's the experience of a lot of our Black students, mm-hmm. is, and instead of taking an approach of this exists, how can we support them through it? We unfortunately kind of question, we make them articulate. We make them really understand and do all this research and do all this like higher level investigation of history and culture to then say like, no, this exists. I need somebody to change this for me. I need somebody to work with me to change it, instead of being like, no, it exists. We know it exists. Because when we look at the data, we can see that it exists. Yeah. And we're not really taking that to heart for whatever reason.
No, you put it very well. Let me ask you this. What was your college experience like?
Very much the same. So I also went to a predominantly white institution. I went to North Carolina State University, go Pack. Mm-hmm. And I had an amazing Black cultural center on campus, and I had an amazing person in my life, but mentor, friend who was like my homegirl now. So shout out to Mama Thorpe. she retired from being the program coordinator for the Black cultural center for like 20 years.
Oh my God.
And that was
long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to, that was one of the first roles in Black Culture Center work that I had, that she was able to pass the baton and pass the torch to me. Mm-hmm. So my undergrad experience was, interesting. Like I had both very much so in the Black community, but very much so in the larger community. So I did things in our version of a Black student union. And I also did things in our version that had a voice and to say as to what happened in overall the student unions from the perspective of advocating for Black students. Mm-hmm. So it was very much so. I had a wonderful time. Like, mm-hmm. would I trade it for the world? Absolutely not. But I cannot even say that if it wasn't for the Black infrastructure, if it wasn't for the Black people, if it wasn't for the people who cared about me when I didn't know to care about myself, I probably wouldn't have even survived. I wouldn't have made it through. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like and I say in a previous life, but current heart and soul, like I was a dancer and a choreographer. So like I really got to be able to explore and think about Blackness through my choreography. So I did a piece. I remember having this idea of doing a piece about the Angel Oak Tree in South Carolina, and to shape what it was like to meet in secret, what it was like to love in secret, what it was like to like do all these things under the tree. Because if you haven't been to the tree, if anybody's listening, I would absolutely say visit the Angel Oak Tree in Charleston, South Carolina, or it's right off of Charleston. because like the knots in the tree look like mouths, like, and there's this history of people getting married under this tree, but people like having secret relationships because it was not allowed because of enslavement. Mm-hmm. And it was literally by death that they could, if they were caught, that they could do this. So I did a piece around that. And at first I was just kind of playing around with it, but it was my mentor, Mama Thorpe, that I was talking about, that was like, oh, you're creating a piece? Okay, cool. Well, we have this program coming up. You're going to present it. What? So,
I'm so laughing sophomore, because that is like such that is like the essence of Black people. But go ahead.
Yeah, it is. And like, so like, you know, sophomore year, John is like, I'm going to do what now? This is just an idea. This is just what I'm, you know, playing with. She's like, no, I believe in you. You're going to do it. And, you know, what do you need? You need funds, you need costumes, you need, what you need? Cool. And like did it. And like that moment changed me.
Yeah.
It changed what was possible. It changed to have somebody not only see me, but to see what I could do even when I didn't think I could do it. And that's the kind of, I think that happens everywhere. Like that happens across racial bounds. Mm-hmm. But I will say there are many more, call it internal biases, call it socialization. There are many more barriers. Mm-hmm. That Black folks have to doing that. And there are intentional ways in which Black folks who have been through life can then look back, reach back and say, no, I recognize not only would this be good for us and be good for you, but this will be good for the world to see. Yeah. And to like, to cultivate that kind of talent, and for me to have a job that I get to cultivate that kind of talent was directly inspired by my time at NC State.
Oh, that's fabulous. So, are you still dancing and choreographing?
I mean, from time to time, I'm trying to get back into it. My goal was to always choreograph at least one piece a year. So I was doing that up until the pandemic. And after that, I was kind of fell out of it, stopped going to like studios. And now that I'm in Colorado, like looking to get back into it.
Okay. I've got sort of a next question for you, John. It's somewhat presumptuous. But I'll ask it anyway. What are you loving about being in Colorado? And I realize that could be I'm not loving anything, Michelle, but
yeah, that's a great question.
But I thought I'd kind of try it out. So what is it that you're loving about being in Colorado?
So I will say this, I am struggling with adjusting to Colorado. I am starting to feel things, to understand, to meet people, to find things that fill my spirit. I will say that the first thing is that my husband is living his best life. I get to see him thrive. And honestly, that is one thing that I'm loving about Colorado, is I get to see this person who is really close to me flourish. And that sustained me.
Colorado. Yeah, it's for him. Okay.
It's working for him. So like, you know, by way of like, we are, but like, yes. And I think the what I'm loving about Colorado is, I think there's a freedom. Mm-hmm. I think there's a freedom to do the things that you want to do. There's a freedom to like, you don't have to worry about how you look. You don't have to worry about how you, if you can find the space, or if you have the idea for the space, you can make it happen.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that it's easy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that's the thing that I'm loving about Colorado, is that it's really only waiting for the person to have that idea. Mm-hmm. And if you could have that idea and you have the energy, which is a lot to ask for, I'm gonna say, if you can have the energy to have the dream, then it is possible to make it happen here. Mm-hmm. And that is what I'm loving, to where like when I am finding Black spaces and I'm meeting the folks who are creating those Black spaces, the one thing I'm hearing is like, it didn't exist, so I created it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you can be very entrepreneurial here. And I don't mean in the kind of traditional business sense, but I mean, mm-hmm. starting a group, you know, getting people to come together or creating whatever that is, you know, that seems to be missing for you. Yeah, people make it happen. You know, people typically make it happen or they leave. But, you know, typically, as I said, make that happen. So
I'm also.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm also learning to love the outside here.
Okay.
I'm learning to love the outside, appreciate the outside differently. Mm-hmm. I'm now going on hikes, which I was never a hiker, did not think that I would enjoy going on hikes. But going on hikes and just kind of being in that part with nature. So about 2 weeks ago, I went up to the Rocky Mountains and just did this trail and just be able to saw like four different kinds of lakes and a waterfall. And like, it was gorgeous. Wow. Like it was a thing that really helps put life into perspective. So that is something that I'm learning to love about Colorado.
Okay. Becoming a little bit more outdoorsy. I like it. Mm-hmm. So today, you know, you have this platform, KGNU, Black Talk. What is it you want to say to students, to faculty, to staff, community partners, when it comes to the Center for African and African American Studies, when it comes to the cause? What is it you want to say? What is it you want to make certain folks kind of leave this broadcast, leave this show, and have some understanding of what it is, where it's going, that but for this program, your voice today, they might not have?
Yeah. I want to say, first of all, you belong. You are enough. You were born enough. Anything after your birth is really just the cherry on top. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to say that. There's so much that tells you that you don't belong or that you're not able or not capable. You belong, period. Mm-hmm. Period. And then with that the cause can be a space to explore Blackness historically, to explore what it means to you personally, but it really is a place to build a foundation that allows you to move in this world knowing that you belong. Because mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think folks that are listening, there are folks that are listening that question whether they belong or not. And there are folks that are listening who have a background that instilled in them that they belong. Mm-hmm. And I love asking students this question. I love asking people this question. How would you move in this world if you knew that you belonged, if you did not question yourself? Mm-hmm. Not from a cocky or arrogant place, but from a place where it doesn't matter whether the community tells you you belong or not, you belong. Mm-hmm. How do you move in the world? And that's a different kind of vibe. That's a different kind of, like, imagine what we could do as a people if we knew that we belonged. Exactly. And we have vehicles for that. We have support services. We do it through research engagement. We do it through the arts. But really, at the end of the day, we're really saying you belong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that right now we're focused on students and we are including faculty and staff, but we have a vision for this place to be a community resource that isn't always through the gates of the institution or the ivory tower, that we are saying that this is a place for also connection, where like community connection can also come with the folks that are coming from the variety of places that are at the university. Mm-hmm. And we can be a place where everybody belongs.
Yeah.
And hopefully be a model to say that, and this is how you can shape your community spaces, places, services, businesses, wherever, to be more inclusive and increase belonging for others.
Got it. So as I mentioned a little bit ago, the programming, I mean, the number of events and opportunities to come together and just talk, eat your lunch, kind of study, whatever it is you want to do, need to do. The cause really has space for you. What's coming? And when I say what's coming, what can we look forward to, John, programmatically? What's coming up maybe mm-hmm. in the next week or two? Mm-hmm.
in the next week or two, for the folks on campus, we have something called the Culture Crawl. It's a fun opportunity to like get a little more about Black Identity, Black culture. So we have like students who can come, and it's open to everybody, where you're infusing your own shea butter with essential oils. You're creating like these herbal bags and thinking about our like ancestral ways of knowing and taking care of ourselves. But also like we have an activity called like What's Behind the Mask. And then a few more weeks out, we have things that are, we have another mixer for our faculty staff, for our Black faculty staff and students.
Isn't that coming up on the 25th? Is that the 25th?
Yes. It should be 25th, yes.
Yeah, I thought so, because I had it on my calendar. Okay.
And then on the 28th, which is around homecoming, we have created something called the Black Buff Update. And in the Black Buff Update, we're going to be sharing with our alumni and any interested community member. And when I say community, everybody's a community member.
Yeah, remember you told me a little bit about this. Say more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is a time where we're going to be giving updates about the cause and what we're doing, but we're also looking at Black student success from a more holistic way, right? How are Black students in participating in high impact practices that we know gets you to be more well-rounded, gets you experience, prepares you for graduate school, prepares you for community work, prepares you for anything, right? So we're looking at undergraduate research and study abroad, and how they're doing well in conduct and crisis services and career center, and looking like across the board. And we're also pulling in different like metrics that we see in our campus climate survey. So we're working with campus partners across the board in ways that they may or may not have been asked to work, so we can get a good picture of how are Black students actually doing.
So would I have this right if I were to say, for example, you're pulling in the various service centers or resources on campus, but what we'll be hearing in that session is how well or not they're serving Black students. Absolutely. I have that right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So is how well, is there data? Can we encourage them to collect more data? Mm-hmm. Are there strategies? How are we working together in our strategies? Do those strategies work together? So yeah, so it's really letting folks who have an invested interest in Black students on Soyuz Boulder's campus say like, okay, where can I fit in? Where can I support?
No, that's great, because that's really giving us a picture that we've not had.
Yeah.
Because so many of the resource centers and service providers on campus don't kind of slice and dice their data in certain ways. So when you ask questions like, you know, how are Black students being served by fill in the blank? Nobody knows. You know, nobody really has a sense of that. So, no, I love that.
And to be able to do the work and the administrative legwork of like putting that together to then push it back out to the community. Like, this is not just for us to have. There's just so much to do. Like, there's so much to do across the board for everybody. And because Black students are such a small number on campus, sometimes it's really hard to like get enough data or to have the time to aggregate it out.
Got it.
But to do that pre-work and then present it back and give people a little easier time to create strategies around supporting Black students. And then wrapping up, we are having our first, from my understanding, our first Kwanzaa in Boulder program. Mm-mm. No, not the first. Okay, thank you.
City of Boulder, but maybe in terms of campus-wide, perhaps. But I was going to say not in the city of Boulder. Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, thank you. See, thank you, community folks. Like, thank you for letting me know. So we are, and it's going to be open for everybody, including the city of Boulder. Wonderful. So it's on December 1st. And in that, we're going to be, so for the seven principles of Kwanzaa, we're going to have a community representative for each one of those, undergraduate student, graduate student, faculty, staff from the community, and they're going to presenting the research that they're doing. So we have an undergraduate student who's doing research on Black joy.
Oh,
and like, uh-huh. And so she'll be able to present that to the folks in, you know, like 3 to 5 minute vignettes. Mm-hmm. We have students who are studio artists who are going to be bringing their things. We have, so we have folks that are doing things in the community to be, and we're going to be, and Kwanzaa is a place to elevate them and what they're doing, hopefully get more attention on them, but to also see how they're embodying whatever principle. And to say, like, you don't have to have the full Kwanzaa set up. You don't have to do all the things. It's really about reflection.
Yeah.
How am I in relation to the Black community? How have I been last year and how will I next year?
Yeah, I love that. No, I mean, as I said, there's a lot going on, people.
Yeah. And I can talk, continue talking about all the things happening, but yes.
No, but I want to thank you. No, I want to thank you, John Robinson Miller IV. I want to thank you so much for coming on Black Talk today. I mean, you have this, and I knew it when I first met you. You have this amazing spirit, this amazing intuitive spirit, I would say. Creativity to burn, such a generous heart. And what you bring to the cause, what you bring to the Center for African and African American Studies, what you brought to CU is so uniquely you. So no one else could have brought it. So I just want to thank you so much for giving us some of your time this morning. Yeah. And telling us more about yourself, telling us more about the cause. I have a feeling this will be kind of one in a long line of conversations that I have. But again, just want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, coming on to Black Talk. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, and protect your magic for anybody listening.
Thank you so much.
Living in a time where the brave feel helpless and the strong